ॐ पार्थाय प्रतिबोधितां भगवता नारायणेन स्वयं व्यासेन ग्रथितां पुराणमुनिनां मध्ये महाभारतम् अद्वैतामृतवर्षिणीं भगवतीं अष्टादशाध्यायिनीम् अम्ब त्वामनुसन्दधामि भगवद्गीते भवद्वैषिणी.
Chapter 9, verse 15.
Jnana-yajnena-chapyante
Yajanto
mam upasate
Ekatvena-pratatvena
Bahudha-vishvato-mukham
Jnana-yajnena-cha अपि अन्ये च अपि अन्ये यजन्तः माम् उपासते एकत्वेन पृथक्त्वेन बहुधा विश्वतो मुखम्. Here it says through the jnana yajna the cha jnana yajnena by means of jnana yajna cha and api and also Anye. Anye means others. The word means others. The others they're referring to are the ones who have the, as opposed to the ones who have the rajas or tamas dispositions, the ones who have the sattvic dispositions, the mumukshus, the seekers. So these others, they worship the Lord. They worship the Lord doing jnana yajna, through jnana yajna. The yajnas, a yajna is a ritual. In the Vedic, in the Vedas, the rituals are called yajnas, the fire rituals, where you're offering ghee and everything into the fire. You're usually evoking a deity in order to accomplish something. Often it's to accomplish any kamya karma, to accomplish a desire, or to gain punya, to go to a heaven world. You know, I do these rituals. Some rituals are just for my duty, to maintain my dharma. But I do the rituals for punya. I perform my duties for punya so that I can get a better next birth, or I do the different rituals that are enjoined in the Vedic society in order to accrue punya so I can get a better next birth, or kamya karmas in order to, like they often talk about the putra kameshti, if a family is not able to have a child, then they will do particular rituals in order to gain the punya or some daivam, you know, in order to intervene, to be able to gain a child, or to gain wealth, or to gain health, all of these type of things. There's rituals for all of these things. They're called yajnas, you know, and they're very specific how these rituals are done, and there's many of them. So it's either that they're done in order to, as part of your duty, they're done to accrue punya for better births, they're done in order to fulfill desires here on this plane itself. But for jnani or for mumukshu, these rituals, whether they're enjoined, even the enjoined rituals, are not really done. A sannyasi doesn't do these rituals. The ritual they do is the ritual of knowledge of Bhagawan. That's their yajna. And for a jnani or a mumukshu, in fact, the sannyasis will, through a ritual, give up all of the rituals. And then the ritual they really do is manana, you know, is shravana manana nididhyasana, is the study of the shastra, and then also, you know, satsang and teaching, you know, and living the life of a brahmachari or of a student, where your life is totally involved in gaining nishta in that knowledge. And so the jnana yajna is the yajna, really the whole ritual is recognizing everything. We'll see in the verses that come. I recognize, for instance, if I'm doing a ritual as a jnani, as one who has knowledge, I would recognize that the one who's offering the ghee into the fire is Brahman. The ghee itself is Brahman. The fire, Brahman means, you know, the limitless reality of this creation. The truth of the ghee that's being offered into the fire is Brahman. The truth of the one who's offering it is Brahman. The truth of the spoon that's used, you know, the spoon that's used to make the offering is Brahman. The receiving of the ghee and the going up to the devata, all is Brahman. There's nothing that isn't Brahman. And so that is jnanam. And so that fact of Brahman being the self of all beings, of my of the Atma, myself being the self of all beings, and the owning up of that reality, that's called jnana yajna. So jnana yajna, it's Bhagavat jnana yajna. It's the knowledge of Bhagavan, the knowledge of the Lord, the knowledge of Ishwara, the knowledge of the one who is the self in all beings. So through that jnana yajna, these mumukshus or sannyasis, sadhus, who they worship me in that way. That is their mode of worship. And then he says, they worship me through jnana yajna, and they worship me, who is, then he describes himself, me, the one who is Vishwatomukham. Vishwatomukham means the one who has many faces. Vishwa means many, mukham faces. Many faces means because Ishwara is both the nimitta and upadana karanam. Nimitta karanam means the efficient cause. Upadana karana means the material cause. So that means that from the standpoint of Ishwara, so when Krishna says they worship me, you know, who am Vishwatomukham, I am the one, so nimitta karanam, efficient cause, I am the one from whom the whole creation has come. Right? I am the pot maker of the pot. I'm the one who has created this whole creation, who sustains the creation and into whom the creation resolves. So I am the creator, in a sense. I am the efficient cause, the nimitta karma. But I am also the material. So that's different than the pot maker. Right? The pot maker needs to get some clay that is other than the pot maker, and then the pot maker goes and creates something out of the clay. So the material and the creation are different from the one who's creating it. But Ishwara says, no, I'm both an nimitta. Krishna says about himself, I am both the nimitta karana and the upadana karana. I am the one from whom the creation comes, and I'm the material also. So I am the whole, and therefore I have many faces. Not only am I the conscious being, you know, from whom the creation comes, but I am everything in the creation. So the things, I'm the whole creation and the whole material cause of the creation, and therefore I have many, many, many faces. I'm the sun, and I'm the moon, and I'm the plants, and I'm the animals, and I'm the human beings, and I'm the trees, and I'm everything that is, in fact. And so there's limitless things. There's no end to the different forms that Bhagavan appears in, because there is no form that is not Bhagavan. And so, in fact, Ishwara can be worshipped in any form. You know, some people say they like to worship God, they like to worship Lord in nature. Well, nature is beautiful. You know, or they like to worship the Lord in the form of the Himalayas, you know, or in the form of the Ganga. They evoke the presence of the Lord in all of those things, because none of those things are away from the Lord. This is Ishwara, you know. There isn't anything that's not Ishwara. In fact, there's this one story about this that Swamiji tells sometimes about this sadhu. He's this old sannyasi. And he's sitting in his little kutir, and one of his students or somebody's coming to visit him, and the person comes into his kutir, and here he is with his feet, you know, stretched out, cross-legged, on the Shivalingam. This devotee is horrified. How can you put your, how can you put your feet on the Shivalingam like that? And the old man said, I don't know where to put my feet then. And so they moved his feet to another place, and then there was the Shiva Lingam there. And so wherever he put his feet, there was the Shiva Lingam. And he said, I can't have no place to put my feet, because wherever I put my feet, there's Ishwara's there. So my feet are always on Ishwara. What can I do about it? So what can I do? So it's That's a good story. Because there's nothing that's not Ishwar. In fact, that's the drishti that we have to have. That's what we have to understand. That there's nothing that's not Ishwar, and so there's nothing that's not me. So that Vishvatomukham is the one who has infinite... Vishwa means infinite faces, infinite forms, because there's no form that is not me. That's what Krishna is saying. And so then he says, and so, you know, I am worshipped Bahudha in many different ways. In many ways. Bahudha means in many ways. I'm worshipped in many ways. Because I'm Vishvatomukham. You know, I have many faces. There's not just one way to worship me or one thing to worship. Everything is me, so take what you like. Take me in whatever form that you want. But he says, they worship me in many ways, and he says, as ekatvena, where I can be worshipped. So any face, you can, any ways means there's nothing apart from me. But I can be worshipped ekatvena as being one. You can worship me in that way, for the jnani. You can worship me as one. As one means that all this is me alone. All of this is me. There's nothing in the creation that is not me. Everything, the entire creation in me, is me. And so everything in the creation is me. There is only one alone. All of this is just me. There's only one thing here, which is me. That's eka means one. Ekatva means oneness. So they worship me as just being one alone. All of this is Ishwara. This is for jnani, you know, jnana yajna. So you can worship, if you're doing jnana yajna, what are you going to see? That if the jnani, you know, if the one who has the sattvic buddhi, who's a mumukshu, or mumukshu means one who desires liberation, or is a sannyasi, you know, and their whole life is dedicated to me, and so they worship me through jnana yajna. Here's two forms of the jnana yajna. One is they see everything as me. Just they see the oneness. I am the whole. But they also, to the jnana yajna, see prithaktvena. They see me as separate. They see me as one. I am the whole. And they see me as separate, as free from the whole. This is the whole teaching. This is the satyam mitya. They see me as one. That means that you are consciousness. That is the truth. Every nama rupa, every name and form that I see here is nothing but consciousness. Right? If I had a clay relief fresco, you know what that is? It's like a big, like rectangle of clay. And in that rectangle, say there's a beautiful fresco, like a carving, a scene carved out of this big lump of clay, big rectangle of clay. And so they actually carve like a three-dimensional scene into it. And the scene, you know, it can have the sun with the rays carved into the clay, and there can be some clouds carved in, and there can be trees, you know, and grass and people and roadways and bullock carts and all kinds of activity, animals and birds flying. Could be a very complex thing, complex scene carved into the clay. And so if I see that whole scene as clay, I can say this scene is nothing but clay. There is only one clay there. I can say the sun is clay. The sun is clay, right? The rays are clay. The clouds are clay. Right, the trees are clay, the birds are clay, the grass is clay, the roadway is clay, the bullock cart is clay. There's nothing that is not clay. There's only one clay. I am the whole. There's nothing here at all that is not me. There's only one clay. But then, that's the ekatvena, where you recognize all of this is just clay alone. All of this is Brahman alone, is consciousness alone, is my being alone. Just like it's exactly the same, really. If you can understand the limits of the drishtanta, the illustration, just like I can say there's nothing on this whole scene, every single thing in it is clay, 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 clay. There's nothing, zero, nothing that is not clay. even if you could have a very intricate, say you have a bullock cart, you know, being pulled by some cows that is carved into that fresco, the bullock cart can be very detailed with wheels and spokes and nails and all. It can be very, very detailed, but there's nothing there but clay. So like that in this creation, it's very detailed. You know, it's minutely detailed, but there's nothing there but consciousness. There's nothing here that is not consciousness. I am all of this. There's nothing here that is not me. I am this whole. But I am also free of this whole. It's like when the fresco is saying, this beautiful scene is here, and I am that. But I am also free of that. I have no dependence on that scene at all. What if it's wet clay? Just imagine a big thing of wet clay, you know? And so the clay can say, I don't need the scene. I am the scene, but I don't need the scene. And then somebody can come and just wipe it over. And you would say, nothing has happened to me. The scene is gone, but nothing has happened to me. Right? So I am both the scene, and I am totally free of the scene. That I am the scene depends upon me. That's the mitya. The scene, right? The scene is mitya. Means it has no being of its own. For the terms of the clay fresco, the only thing there is clay. There is really no scene in terms of any type of independent substance. There's a scene, all right, but there's no independent substance. There's only clay. So here, in this room, this is quite a scene. This is our scene, okay? And it's complex. There's a lot going on in this scene, let alone being just a most minute little dot in an infinite universe, but this is our little scene, right? But in this little scene with all kinds of color and complexity, there is really nothing here but consciousness. If I were to unravel all of these parts, what I'm always left with is only being itself, being and knownness, consciousness. That is what is here. So in this scene, what is really here in terms of the substance is only consciousness, then Krishna can say, you know, I am the whole. That's the jnana yajna. They worship me through jnana yajna, through the ritual of knowledge, recognizing what? That there's nothing here but me. There's only one. But also prithaktvena. They also recognize that I am free of the whole thing. I'm separate. I'm free. That satyam mitya means my being is the truth of all of this and is at the same time completely free of all of this. So all of this can come and go, right? All this comes and goes. But nothing happens to me. It's just like if the clay scene is wiped out, the clay, all of the clay is still there. There's no problem. So that's why we always use the dream or the imagination analogy, so that you can understand what this creation is really like. Because when you have an imagination, or say you at night, if you have a dream, the dream comes from you, is sustained by you, resolves into you. The sat, the being of the dream, is yourself. The knownness of the dream is yourself. So the whole dream is known. The whole dream is. The dream is, and it is known. That's the sat-chit. That's Brahman. That's yourself. The self, which is infinite. That's Brahman. So this, you have this maya capacity, right, that allows for this projection of the dream. But that dream has no substance apart from you. Right? It comes into being and it folds. It comes into being and it folds. It goes into unmanifest condition. You don't. When the dream is there, your being is there. When the dream is gone, your being is there. Dream is there, you're there. Dream is gone, you're still there. You are the truth of the dream. You're the being of the dream and the knownness of the dream. That's why when the dream goes away, nothing happens to you. Not anything at all. Because? Why? Why doesn't anything at all happen to you? Well, because nothing happens to you. You're free. That's the satyam mitya, right? That's why when we do these these prakriyas, these teaching methodologies, what are we seeing time and time again is pointed out is this satyam mitya. Means every moment, and just in this moment, as these moments are going by, every moment you are present. So I say it like this, the moments, time, so if I say the moments, I can say time, takes place in you. Right? You don't take place in time. Time takes place in you. That's why every moment it is and is illumined by you. Right? You're not going anywhere. Right? But the moments are coming and going, coming and going, and coming and going. Like, for instance, if we just take it in a very gross way, that this moment is gone. This moment is gone. You don't notice that. Why? Because the truth of the moment isn't gone. Right? The self of the moment isn't gone. It's never gone. And so the fact that these moments go and everything in the moment goes doesn't bother you at all, because nothing is really happening. Nothing is really happening in terms of the substance of you that is there filling the moment, because it's not going. That's the satyam mitya. So now if you take any moment, or take yourself through the day. Through the day there's so many things happening. Those things, like even an hour ago, that's totally gone. That's way in the past now. An hour's far gone, you know. But the one who was there an hour ago is the one who's here now. Right? The one who had those experiences an hour ago is the one who's here now. But that's not true. On one level, I mean, you're not there. Right? You're not thinking the same thoughts that you're thinking right now. You're in a totally different situation right now. You know? That moment and that situation is totally gone. Well, it's very weird to think about it, actually. You think about an hour ago. Where is that hour? Where is it? Where is an hour ago? It's gone. It doesn't exist. What's here is right now, right? But the one who was there an hour ago, even though everything that was happening an hour ago doesn't exist anymore, but the one who was there is the one who is here now. And the one who is here now, of course this moment is gone, so the one who is here now, right, never changes. It will be the same one that is here in the future. Right? Nothing ever happens. This one is stable. You know? This one is free of time. The one who's aware of time, the one who's aware of the moment, is free of the moment. Right? Because otherwise you'd be gone when the moment is gone. Say an hour ago, you were there an hour ago, but you're not here now. That's not true. You know? But if you belonged, if you were stuck with the moment an hour ago, then that moment is gone and you're gone. Mm. But that isn't the situation. Time passes through you. You're timeless. You're changeless. You know, and that's why, like, you have a dream. The dream is so real while it's happening, you know, and you may or may not be identified with a character in the dream. You may or may not be, you know. But when the dream is gone, there hasn't been, you haven't been touched in any way. The dream is gone. The dream characters are gone. You know, the dream city, the dream universe is gone. You know, but absolutely nothing has happened. And then you can tell us about the dream you had. You know, the one who is here now, you know, is the one who was there in the dream. But nothing in the dream remains, except for you, not your dream body. Not the body, not the sense organs, not the mind, not the relationships, not the ahankara, not the eye notion. There's nothing. Not the universe, not the space, air, fire, water, earth of the dream. It's all completely gone. No problem. You have no problem with that because you are still here. Who is still here? Right? The dream replaces the waking state. Right? The waking state is gone. That's no problem. The whole waking state, waking body, when you go to the dream, waking body is gone, waking sense organs are gone, waking mind is gone, waking relationships are gone, waking world is gone. But no problem for you because you're dreaming. You have another universe, another body, you know, another set of relationships. You haven't noticed anything unusual about that. Then you can think, oh, well, that's because I'm in the dream and that's kind of an altered state, and thinking that there's anything weird about it doesn't go along with it being a dream. We think a thing like that. But then when you wake up, you know, now you're in the waking state, and now this waking state has a longer, you know, lifespan. The dream takes place in the waking state, after all. But also you don't have any trouble going backwards that way either. You say, that was my dream. And in that dream, I was in a totally another world with a different body and different sense organs, different mind, different relationships. Mm. You know, different setting altogether. In fact, I didn't even have a human body. I had a dog body. Just say it like it's okay. Don't you think that's strange? Then you go into the deep sleep state, and in the deep sleep state, you say, oh, I had the greatest sleep. I had the greatest sleep last night. And you know what? I slept so soundly, I didn't know anything. There was nothing going on. I was so asleep, I didn't even know I was sleeping. There was nobody even commenting on the sleep. It was fantastic. You know? I had the greatest deep sleep. But you know what? In the deep sleep, the universe isn't there, the body isn't there, the sense organs aren't there. Even the mind is not there, even the I thought is not there. There's nobody commenting saying, oh, isn't this great? No, that person's not there. You know what? That state is fine with us. Swamiji goes on and on about talking about, you know, what it's like, how we have our wonderful pillows and comforter and, you know, such a nice bed and everything. And that we can just, you know, it's time to go to bed, and then we go and get in the bed and snuggle up and get all as comfy as we can possibly get, and then just close our eyes and blot out the entire world. Unwillingly blot out the entire world, our own body, mind, sense organs, the entire identity of being a jiva, of it being an individual. We blot out the whole thing, even the I notion. We go into a total state of as though non-duality, really. There's no dual relationship present. And we love it. And then when the alarm goes off, we want to just put that down and go back into that state. That's very telling. And it's all fine with us. Nothing happens. There's no fear. You know? It's fine with us. I like to be without the entire universe and my body, mind, sense, organs, and everything. I like that. Now, you know what else? Why do we meditate? You willingly meditate to blot out the entire creation. To blot out your all of your experiences, your body, your mind, your sense organs, the I notion. Why? So you can just erase all of that and just be with yourself. Just be alone as yourself. That's what we do. And we do that because the nature of my being is ananda. There is nothing more whole, more complete, more full. There's no place that I would rather be than with that wholeness and fullness. Mm-hmm. The deep sleep is what we call, you know, lazy man's samadhi. Bhagawan has given that to us. You can go to sleep, blot out everything, and just refresh yourself, you know, in just being with yourself. Just think, you know, whether even taking walks in beautiful nature, listening to beautiful music. It's just a way of losing yourself. Losing yourself in yourself, you know? But deep sleep, I think deep sleep and the desire to meditate are very telling for what truly is the source of ananda. And in that ananda, that wholeness, there is no creation. But, like when you wake up from a dream, the dream is gone, there is no dream. But nothing has really happened. Because what is still there. Right? Like if I smear over the clay and get rid of the clay relief, I've smeared it over, you know, but nothing has really happened. the names and forms have gone, but what is really there hasn't gone. And so when you wake up from a dream, for instance, the dream is gone, you know? So this I am the whole, there is nothing there but me. See, this is the thing. This ekatva, I see myself, I am the whole. And I am the whole. Then the names and forms that have caused me to say I am the whole are not there. They're resolved. So now I just am, right? I just am. Means I'm free of the so-called whole, the names and forms that get me, as the clay relief statue, you know, gets the clay. It's filled with clay. It's not filled with clay. There's only clay there. See how slippery the language is? Say you say the clay relief is filled with clay, as though there's something there besides clay. Right? So we say the Atma or Brahman fills this creation. It's not ekatva. If there is nothing here except Brahman, you know, that's the Maya. That's the whole Maya. So now say we get rid of the names and forms. Then what is there? Exactly what was there before. You see that? If I get rid of the names and forms, what is there? Exactly what was there before. Because the names and forms have no being at all apart from me. If I get rid of the clay relief, if I get rid of the forms, what is there? Clay. What was there before? Clay. Right? If I have the clay relief, if I have this whole carving, what was there? Clay. So then you can say, I am the whole. Bhagavan will say, I am the whole, you know. I'm the bullock cart and the trees and the sun, etc. So we get rid of those, and now there's only the clay. So now what has changed? What was there before? Clay. What is there now? Clay. I get rid of this creation. Here we have the creation. What is here? Brahman, consciousness. I get rid of the creation. What is here? Brahman, consciousness. What has changed? Nothing. That's why you don't have an experience of anything changing. You know? Because nothing does change. That's the truth of it. But the mind gets lost in this Maya, you know, where through my sense organs I'm totally engaged in this world of duality, you know, not recognizing the self of it all. Or if a jnani is engaged all right in a mithya way. Engaged without being engaged. I can say, I am all of this, acknowledging all of this, walking through it, talking, doing all of the things that are required for you as a jiva, living your life here. You know, you do all of these things. But all the while, all of these things are you. Right? They're you. They're your being. And if they are your being, all of this is your being, then all of this has oneself. That's what makes it Ishwara. You see what I mean? Just think about it. This entire creation is nothing but you. You, your being is the satchit of the whole. You're the self of the subject and the self of the object. That means that this whole creation is a conscious being. Right? Not just this body. This whole creation is a conscious being. That's what we mean by Ishwara. All of this is Ishwara. All of this is a conscious being, and since it's a conscious being, we call it Ishwara. Now, what is this body, mind, sense organs? This body, mind, sense organs is part of Ishwara. Right? It's just like the bullock cart and if you take the clay relief, and you think of the bullock cart and the people and the cows and the trees and all of that, there's a scene there. There's a scene that has a certain order. You know, there's sun and clouds and trees and, you know, roads and animals. There's an order that keeps all of that going. It's a nice picture. It's a picture. It's a scene. It's a movie. This isn't like a movie. Okay? It has an order. But that order, right, has a self. And so the Bhagavan says, you know, I am the one, I am the self, this conscious being, from whom this scene you know, this orderly creation of infinite intelligence comes. Right? And so we're walking around as jivas within this infinite intelligent scene, thinking that I'm the conscious being, and this is inert, and this is inert, and this is inert, and I have to make my way through this inert world, and I meet other little conscious beings along the way. You know, and I'm a little conscious being trapped in this body. This body is going to die. And my mind, of course, is upset because I didn't get what I wanted over here or there and the other thing. So I get totally enmeshed in this incredible scene that's going on. Right? Instead of, I mean, that's fine, but what if that's all I know? You know, what if that's what I know? Is that I'm just this individual, you know, walking around in this world as the conscious being in an inert world, meeting other conscious beings subject to birth and death and looking for some way to be happy. That's the reality. That's what I come to knowledge. That's what I become a mumukshu and I say, oh my God, is this really the situation? Is this the truth? Is this what it is, or is there something else? Mm. And you know, I hope there's something else. Bhagavan, if you're there, please save me, please. Give me, tell me what it is. Please tell me what it is. And then what does Bhagavan have to say? You know, I am the one. You know, the people who seek me worship me, you know, through Jnana Yajna. I have many faces. You know, I have many faces. I am the whole, I am all of this. I am everything. I am all of this. And I'm also free of all of this. That's the Satya Mitya. And it is in this way that those who seek me, those who have that sattvic disposition, who are mumukshus, who are desirous of liberation, they seek me, this one of many, me who have many faces. They do jnana jnegna to me. They worship me through knowledge as being the whole and as being the one who is free of the whole. Mm. That's the whole vision is right there. It's really beautiful. And then he's going to go on now to say, you know, I'm the ritual, you know, I'm the ritual, and I'm the yajna, and I'm the offering, and I'm the food, and I'm the mantra, I'm the ghee, I'm everything.
So all the parts.
I'm all the parts. So we'll see you some more next week. Okay, let's take just a moment. Om Purnamada Purnamidam Purnat Purnamudachyate Purnasya Purnamadaya Purnameva Vasishyate Om Shanti 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 Hari Om Shri Gurubhyo Namaha Hari Om.
This information or this knowledge, this is born of Shastra, right? I mean,
Yeah. The Gita is considered to be like an Upanishad because Krishna taught it for one thing, but also it's in keeping, totally in keeping with the vision of the Upanishads. So it's praised as itself as an Upanishad, even though it isn't. It's a smriti. It comes from, it's found right in the middle of Mahabharata.
When you were speaking about the clay relief,
yeah,
of the scene,
yeah,
and then you said the warnings that we use, how mistaken they can be, to say like this is filled with clay, what got to me, what I cracked up, because like that word does not really describe the truth of it.
Yeah.
But it's the word that I catch, and that creates an image.
Is the word, if we say it's filled with clay?
Yeah.
Yeah. Because it's that's the to understand the misnomer there is great, because see, there's nothing there but clay. So you can't say it's filled with clay. So then how do you account for these names and forms? Because they have, you know, they have no being of their own. You see what I mean? There's nothing there except the clay. It's not like you can take, it's not like clay is poured into something else. You know, like for instance, say if you have a cup and you pour water into the cup, the water fills the cup. And so there's something there that can get filled.
Yeah.
Here there's nothing there to get filled.
Mm-hmm.
Right? There's no second thing.
Mm-hmm.
That's what makes this Maya.
So there's no filling.
There's no filling because there's nothing to fill. But then from the there's no second thing to fill. But then from this, from the standpoint of here, when we're dissecting the body, you know, into its tissues and bones and everything, you know, this body is filled with whatever's inside it, and this is the skin. So sometimes we think this Maya, maybe it's like a giant skin of some sort, you know, but the thing is that skin itself is consciousness. So Maya means it is knowledge. Swamiji says, see, I like the way that he's dealing with this now. He says, you know, it's this Maya is manifest knowledge. So for instance, if you think like if you think of a meadow, or you think of your car, or any object, you think of the ocean, that's manifest knowledge for you. That's your ocean knowledge. But that ocean knowledge, so you have a visualization, say, as you think of the ocean, you have a visual of the ocean. Now, is consciousness, the sat-chit, filling that visualization? Is it pouring into it? See what I mean? Does the visual of the ocean have any substance of its own to pour consciousness into it? Say, no, it's Maya. Maya means yama iti Maya. That which is not is Maya. It's a tricky trick of language. That which is, it's there. Right, but it has to, if you say that which is not, that is Maya. So it's there, but it has no independent being. So that which is not, right, that is Maya. You see the trick of it? Because, like if I said, the flower, the city in the sky, if I say there is no city in the sky, there's nothing to comment on because it's not there. Right, but here, Maya, this is here, but it has, it's not. It's here, but it has no, and we experience it,
mm-hmm.
but it has no independent being. And what is its being is free of it. Like if you imagine an ocean, you're free of the ocean. The ocean totally depends upon you for its sat and chit, for its consciousness, for its being. But you don't depend on it. The ocean could come and go, and, you know, it comes into being. The manifest knowledge comes into being, goes out of being. Nothing happens to you. You don't come into being and go out of being.
So is that really true? I mean, if everything just disappeared,
then there would just be you.
No variance.
No variance. No variance. You experience, you think this is a big thing, but mm-hmm. you are actually experience this moment to moment, and in a very graphic way, from waking state to dream state to deep sleep state. Another way that's very easy for you to grasp this, it's a moment to moment, people get in trouble with that. But what about your emotional states? That tends to be very graphic. Because emotional states last for a little while, you know? Like you're depressed. And you're just depressed for, say you're depressed for 3 hours or 3 days or whatever it is. You're depressed. And then you're not depressed.
Mm.
You're depressed and now you're happy.
Mm.
Right? You, the one who were depressed, are now the one who is happy. That means you're neither happy or depressed. You were depressed, then you were agitated, then you were happy, you know, and then you were sleepy. Whatever. So, but the one who was, each one of those states come and go.
So if all of this disappeared, you think, and there won't be any variance.
But?
Will I miss anything? Do you think I'll miss my body and all this stuff?
No.
You'll miss your bus, Ed.
You'll miss your bus.
What?
No, but see, this is another way to understand this. At least I think this is important. When you have a dream at night, sometimes you have a body in the dream. And you're doing things. You know, carrying on and getting involved. Sometimes you don't have a body in the dream. It means you're not identified with anybody. You're just the whole. That's Ishvara. You're the whole. You don't think when you're just having a dream and you're the whole, or you're having an imagination and you're the whole, you don't have any identification with the body. You don't think, oh my gosh, I don't have a body. Where'd my body go? There's no such feeling. You know? This is, you're now, the identification is with the whole manifest knowledge, whatever it is. Now sometimes you enter into that dream as a jiva, and now you're looking around from the standpoint of that jiva, you're looking around at the dream or the imagination from within it through your sense organs. And then you think, I am this body, and oh, this body is subject to death, and you know, maybe I'm going to lose it, I'm just going to die someday, and then all, because it's true, the body will die someday.
And
that's another worry, and I'm going to miss it, and what will I do without it? This is who I am. This is who I am, and I'm not going to be there. You know, but actually, it's not who you are. You think it's who you are, but it's not who you are. And in fact, when that body goes, just like a dream, say the body goes, and there's no reincarnation because you have knowledge. Say, I'm making a little jump there. don't worry about it. Say the body goes, and you're not going transmigrating anymore. Because when you're transmigrating body after body after body, then you're always thinking, "Oh, I thought I was going to die, but I don't. There is no really death. Here I am as a jiva, and I'm still traveling around and having these experiences." You know, so you're still a body, either a subtle body or you've taken a physical birth. You're still roaming around within the universe in a physical in a form. But say you're a Jivan Mukta, and that ajnanam, that ignorance that caused you to have this identification with the body is no more, then what are you? Then you're the whole, then you're Ishvara, because you are Ishvara anyway. Whether you're identifying with the body or you're not identifying with the body, you're still Ishvara. Do you see what I mean? Like if you have an imagination of my meadow, so you have the meadow imagination. And in the imagination, you have imagine a bunch of people walking around in the meadow, and there's birds and animals, etc. And in your imagination, you identify with one of the people in the meadow, and so you're walking along in there with your friends. Okay? So now the question is, who are you? Are you the person walking in the meadow, or are you the whole meadow? Or are you the self from whom the whole meadow has come?
Same question, huh?
You're the whole. From the standpoint of the meadow, you are the self of the meadow. You are one. You are the whole. From the standpoint, but also equally true, is that you are free of the meadow. You're prithak, that prithak dvaina. You're free of the meadow because the meadow comes from you, is sustained by you, and resolves into you. You know, the most fearful thing is for you to think that you're the little creature in the meadow. Because if you're the little creature in the meadow, then you are subject to birth and death and change and have no control over anything. And then, poor little thing, you're trying to run around making things happen, you know, for you. to solve the problems of your life.
And you have to fight to survive.
Yeah, and you, another problem, so you're, here you are scrambling around to try to solve this terrible problem of becoming whole and complete. Yeah. And you think that you're alone, first of all, I mean, you're finite and mortal and all of that, that's one thinking. And then, of course, you are the conscious being in an inert creation. So you don't even know that you are part of a bigger story. See, the level, the ignorance is just compounds upon itself. You think that you are this figure in this creation. You look around and you see little conscious bubbles walking around here and there. But you are a conscious, little conscious, mortal entity within, you know, this infinite dream creation or imagination that you have. And that's what you know.
Yeah.
You don't know that your body, mind, sense organs, everything that this form consists of, is part and parcel of a greater picture, of a greater story, of a greater intelligence. You don't know that. Nor do you know that you're the self of the whole thing. Nor do you know that you're the self of the whole thing is the very ananda or fullness that you run around trying to find. Every human being, every animal, in fact, is going toward things that they think will give them shanti, will make them happy, and running away from things that they think will make them unhappy. But Vajnani has a totally different drishti, totally different vision of the whole thing, because for the Jnani, the source of ananda has been discovered. You no longer project it onto the world. And so sitting in the wholeness of your being, you experience the world. As long as you are alive and you have this body, mind, sense organs, you experience this world. But you experience the world as Ishwara, of which this body, mind, sense organs is a part. So it all becomes very interesting in a way, and to see how Ishwara handles this, you know, situation, and this situation, and this situation. And you play your part. You do the best that you can in the situation that's been given to you. You do the dharma, whatever the dharma is in that situation, and that's the role you're playing in this picture. You know, but you appreciate yourself as being contained within Ishwara, part and parcel of Ishwara, from the standpoint of the jiva, I mean, this individuality. And that makes life a lot more interesting and fun, and you know, you don't take it so seriously as though you have to carve your way out, you know. You have to carve your life out, you know, out of granite. Carve the life out of granite, and nobody's there to help you, and you know, you have to make your way or you'll just end up a big loser. A bag lady. You'll end up as a bag lady with nothing, and nobody will want you, and you'll just, you know, whatever nightmare is yours. Yeah. But from a Jnani's position, that's not, even from a Hindu position, they don't think like that. You have your karma. You took this birth because of karma. It'll take you all the way through. It's your little part of Ishwara's play, you know, of the scene that you find yourself in. It'll take you all the way through from birth to death, you know, and so you can enjoy the life as it unfolds, and it will unfold all the way through. It doesn't just unfold for the first 20 years or the first 50 years or the first 60 years, and then it stops.
And it fails.
And it stops, and then it says, okay, you're on your own now. There was the prarabdha. We took you up to this age. You know. But now you're on your own. You know. Sorry about that. And the universe just goes on its own way, and you're left out. It's not that way. The prarabdha takes you all the way through. And all the way through, you are there in that situation to deal with it. So really, it's more, if you really look at it, the situation that you're dealing with in life is already here. See, it's very interesting. The situation that you're really responding, right? Continually responding to the situation that is already here. I was just listening to Swamiji, a lecture I was listening to of his, and what did he say? He was talking about a person, a Vedantin. I think I said this in another class. I listened to this about a week ago. Anyway, I can't remember. He said something like, for a person to really be a Vedantin, to really you know, live this knowledge. You have to just live day to day. That's what it is. Day to day, and you do your dharma, you do what's appropriate, what's being asked of you in every given situation. That's what you do. You do, you know, keeping with your values, especially if you're a mamukshu and you're working on yourself and work on the areas where you're not, where you would choose to act differently to improve. Then that's the sadhana. You do your best day to day, day after day, and you live one day at a time. And if you can't do that, then that's hard. You wouldn't be a very good sannyasi. If you're sannyasi, you have to do that. You know, but you learn to really enjoy doing that because you're in relationship with Bhagavan and you see what this day brings. And think of the alternative. The alternative is actually where most people are, where they spend very little time in the present. And the vast majority of time fretting over the past and worrying about the future. Very little time just being with the present and participating in it. Yeah. But that's not a criticism. It's because without knowledge, that's a very worrisome situation. You know, oh my God, I did this and I did that and I screwed up this and I screwed up that and that's why I'm here now and look at what's going to happen to me in the future. Because you don't have any idea where the ananda is hiding. You know, the fullness that you're seeking, the well-being that you're seeking, you don't really know where it is. Mm. It's like a great treasure hunt. Mm. You know, how to find it.
You're on a quest.
There's all kinds of myths about it, you know. The quest. You know, the pot of gold at the end of the rainbow. Or the
Holy Grail.
The Holy Grail or the mother of pearl shell in the bottom of the ocean.
The seventh wave.
Yeah. But that's all real, you know. Real within Maya, you know, within Ajnana, within Samsara, within the ignorance, that's real. We're all, and the thing is that you, as you go along within this Maya, within this Samsara, you become more sophisticated in your search for Ananda. And that becoming more sophisticated really is the discovery of Dharma. Because you start to really understand as a person matures that really the Ananda is not about sensual sense pleasures. It doesn't even compare to Dharma. And so Dharma means doing what is appropriate in a given situation. Dharma brings about real shanti, much more than any type of sense pleasure can give, and it's much more stable. So Dharma really gives you the mind of a mumukshu. A person who follows Dharma, that mind is prepared for that mumukshutvam, because you, mumukshutvam means that desire for liberation, because you have more space to reflect, you know, more prayerful relationship. Dharma also involves a relationship with Ishvara.
But Radha, when you speak about the sense pleasure, you're not speaking about physical sexual stuff. Speaking about
sense objects.
The tendency to control or dominate by rage or so.
No, with sense pleasure, I'm not talking about sex at all, though sex could be a sense pleasure.
Right.
What I mean is about objects of desire in the world. Let me have this thing so that I can be happy. Let me have this person so that I can be happy. Let me have this job so I can be happy. This thing, this object, you know, this situation. Those are sense pleasures. I think if I could have that, then I would be happy.
You could say the same thing for moksha then, right?
Yes, but the difference, you can say, first of all, well, so start with sense pleasures. They're the most fragile and problematic. Then we go to Dharma. Dharma is much more stable, even though we can't be dharmic all the time. We're also not perfect. You know, and also sometimes you don't even know what's Dharma and what's a Dharma. You make mistakes, mm-hmm. right? So but you can't be perfect, but nevertheless, it gives much more stability. Mm-hmm. So you start to have a desire. Your desire is to follow Dharma. That's your desire. And it gives much more stable ananda. Then from there you can go, I desire liberation, moksha. And then that is the most stable because that results in something which is timeless. The fulfillment of moksha, of the mumukshu, is moksha. And moksha is the very nature of the self, and that's timeless. So that's the end of the problem. So we say moksha, the desire for the mumukshu, the desire for liberation, is the most benign desire because it resolves itself into ananda, where all of the other desires are just what we call dukkha yonis. They're just wombs for sorrow because you fulfill the desire.
You want another one.
And then that situation, things, you either don't, you change, you don't want that thing anymore, or somebody takes it away, or, you know, the time doesn't stop, and so something that was pleasing to you at one moment becomes something sorrowful or inconsequential at another moment. And that's the samsara in the world.
Yet Krishna speaks about fulfilling your desires.
In what way?
After dharmic.
We would say like that, like this. If you have the prarabdha karma, which you do, takes you from birth to death, that prarabdha will unfold in three different ways. One has to do with what other people want you to do. They'll pull you into the karma, into the situation. The second one is the universe itself will create a situation that you find yourself in. Nothing to do with you, just the universe did it to you. And there you are. The third one is what they call swecha. It comes out, it's your own desire. So now, it's not as though you can't live in this world without desire. You need a desire to go get a glass of water. You need to have a desire just to go to sleep or to feed yourself. You need desire. But when we talk about desire, that is problematic, we're talking about what we call the desire template. I want this so that I can be happy, which means that your ananda is totally tied to the fulfillment of that desire. I want this so that I can be happy, or I don't want this so that I can be happy. What if, for jnani, the ananda, you know, is not tied to the desire? So you can say, I want this, of course I want this so that I can be happy, but if I don't get it, I'm fine also, because the source of ananda is myself. So these desires become mithya. So the mithya desire is not that's not a problem. Now, we also say, for you to mature properly, to gain antakarna shuddhi, kind of a purity of mind, you need to be able to fulfill your desires. But you need to do it with a karma yoga attitude, so that you go toward trying to accomplish the things that you want, but you receive the results of those actions as prasad, with a prasada buddhi. You know, prasad means as being given from the Lord. And that allows you to not try to deny your desires or be a sannyasi before you are a sannyasi, but it allows you the right attitude to go ahead and to live and to fulfill these desires, but always in relationship with Ishwara. So it's all, you know, as prasad from the Lord. So that's that karmayoga buddhi. So I'm not sure which way you were approaching that, but it's not at all that you shouldn't have desires, because you couldn't be alive if you didn't have desires.
Yeah, my unconscious response was being brought up Christian and having been in the monastery, you know, that like you hear, you shall have, you know, no sensual pleasures, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And it's like, you know, that gets very, very torted, because the very fact of tasting good food could be included in that, couldn't it?
Everything, yeah. It becomes... You know, I like Swamiji's example for vairagya dispassion of the helium balloon. You know, helium balloon? What that is for a child is much different than what it is for an adult. If a child loses their helium balloon, they cry and they're devastated. Their balloon is gone. Or if somebody pops it, you know, awful. But for an adult, they can enjoy and have fun and all of that. And if it gets popped, or if it goes up and gets loose, it's absolutely fine. It's fine to have the bloom, and it's fine not to have the bloom. Seriously fine, not just pretend fine. It is fine. That's vairagya. That's what we mean by dispassion. And so, for Jnani, the whole universe becomes that way. It is fine. This is fine, and it's fine to not have it also. That's freedom. But the only way, you can't pretend that. The way that you have that is because you already have the ananda. You know? Your mind enjoys the ananda, which is your own nature. It asks the self for that ananda, not the objects. The objects don't have it anyway. You know, if an object had it and you got that object, everybody would be after you. You have the object. You have the ananda object. There's no such thing. Every object you have, you know, maybe at one time gave you a moment's happiness. And now it's probably a garage sale item. You know, or a source of sorrow. Look at people. How people go from a source of great joy to a source of great pain to a source of indifference and back and forth and back and forth. They're not a source of ananda. Or they would be a source of ananda. Something that's really a source of ananda doesn't just flip over into a source of pain. Or a source of neutral. Mm. And also, say you have something that's a great ananda to somebody, at the same time, great misery to another person. And to another person, they could care less about it. That the ananda has nothing to do with the object at all. And so, Jnani's the one that's discovered the source. And the source happens to be your being. And so the mind revels in your being, and from that position, you know, experiences your prarabdha. And you don't ask much of the prarabdha. It's your prarabdha. It's Ishvara. You know? And so if you don't ask a lot of the prarabdha, like, oh, prarabdha, please make a turn so that I can, you know, be happy. Well, that's not going to happen. You know, it's going to make you happy when it makes the turn. It all depends upon your particular attitude. It doesn't have anything to do with the object, really. It has to do with your attitude. And then if you want to get into another level of it, the prarabdha is 50-50. And so you have to have a good attitude, because 50% of the time it's not going to be very good. The situation. 50% of the time the situation is going to be not meant to please you. So then what do you do?
I mean, so one of the problems seems to, I mean, when, you know, after thinking about it for a while, it seems like, yeah, this is sort of making sense. And then, of course, I mean, you end up in some situation where you just completely lose it. And then it bothers you in two ways. One, because you've lost it. And the second, because, I mean, you feel you shouldn't have lost it. You know, you should have maintained your calm. So it's sort of frustrating in this very strange way.
Yeah, but you know what Shankara says about that in one of the verses in the Gita that we did, I think it's chapter 2. He said, in karma yoga, you want to gain that samatva buddhi, means that equipoise in victory and defeat. It means that the things that you do really well in the world and the things that you don't, you have to have that vairagya, that samatva buddhi. Then in his bhasha he says, and you even have to have it toward your ability to do that or not. Yeah, that's what it is. You have to have that samatva buddhi toward your success and failure in your success and failure. You know, in the way you react to your success and failure. So you have to go in one notch. Do you understand what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. That's that inner friend. You know, the inner friend that says, that's okay, don't worry, we'll do it better next time. Or, you did your best, you didn't do it so well this time, it doesn't matter, you'll do it better next time. You're doing fine. It's like you tell your little child when he falls on his bottom and he's trying to walk. And you just help him get up and say, you're doing great, you just keep going, it's fine. You have to have that kind of love. And respect, you know. We have to respect ourselves, to give ourselves the benefit of the doubt that you're a good person and you're trying your best. And it's not always good enough. I mean, it's not always, it's good enough, but you don't always accomplish what you are intending to accomplish like that. Sometimes it takes quite a while, especially, you know, a lot of ups and downs, especially with things, you know, that you're working on in yourself that you want to improve, like whatever that may be, just the shortcomings that we might have. You know, if you're really working on something, it's, you know, it's not always accomplished overnight. It takes time. You don't ask yourself to accomplish these things in the world like that. Sometimes things take months or years to accomplish in the world, you know, in the physical reality. It's the same, you know, when you're trying to kind of restructure different feelings and attitudes in your psyche that plague you. Sometimes it takes some time, and you have to be patient and kind and be your own cheerleader. No, really, respect.
Right. It seems that you said something in your talk tonight about the jnani having an attitude of, seeing mithya and the creation.
Now, when I said that, I mean, this, seeing this as mithya really means to see it as Ishvara. You see the truth of this as Ishvara. You know?
Yes.
The satyam mithya.
Yeah.
That this has an infinite, it's an infinite intelligent order where it has a conscious being. And the conscious being is yourself.
So it's dependent that I'm the conscious being and Ishvara is the conscious being that supports.
Well, there's two levels. First of all, the conscious being is only one. So the conscious being that you are is the conscious being which Ishvara is. So there's only one conscious being. Mm-hmm. Then from the standpoint of this body, mind-sense organs, this body, mind-sense organs is part of Ishvara's form. The whole universe. This body, mind, sense organs is part and parcel of the whole of Ishvara's body. But Ishvara's self is yourself. Right? It's like if you use the wave ocean analogy, the wave is part of the ocean. And it's governed and held by the laws of the ocean. Right? But the self of the wave is the self of the ocean. That's the water. There's really only one water, the one conscious being, but now there's one whole ocean of which all of the jivas are a part. That's on that one level. But in the truth, there's one water, which is the water of the water of the wave is the water of the ocean. See what I mean? And so for you as a jiva, you recognize this body, mind, sense organs is part and parcel of Ishvara, of the whole form, and the self that I am is the self of Ishvara. Right? So really all there is, in the end you'll just say there is Ishvara. Or you say I am Ishvara. When you say I am Ishvara, then you are the conscious being, and this body, mind, sense organs is part of Ishvara's body. So in fact you are Ishvara because yourself is this is the one self which Ishvara is, and this body, mind, sense organs belongs to Ishvara. See what I mean? So everybody remember that you got everybody get my emails that I'm not having class Friday, Saturday, or Sunday. You need to know that. Yeah, I'll put you on the mailing list.